You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Hey, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty, it is Tuesday, June 2nd, 2015, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the show. We're so glad you could join us today. It's a great day in marijuana law reform. Looks like there'll be a lot of votes on marijuana on Capitol Hill either late tonight or early tomorrow in the congressional session. Of course, we'll cover all that for you on tomorrow's news, and we've got a little teaser for it in the headlines today. Also, we are looking forward to a new show that will be debuting on 420 Radio, a new live show. It's going to be coming to you on Thursday, and we're still looking for a time, but we're going to have Jenny Ray McGee and her new show. I don't know what she's going to call it, but she wanted to have a show, and I said, all right, let's give you a show. So stay tuned, and we'll get more details on that as they develop, but we're putting that show together this week, so we're really looking forward to that. Also, coming up on today's show, I have got probably the best audio recorded all year long on the issue of debunking reefer madness. That's Normal's deputy director, Paul Armentano, who did his performance, his presentation of Cannabis and Impairment, the psychomotor performance presentation. And it pretty much debunks all of the smoking and driving talking points, all of the stone driver talking points, all of the drug talking points, drug testing talking points, marijuana is not medicine. Any of these things that you've heard or read in the comment pages and the newspapers or even from your own elected officials, Paul Armentano's got the debunk for it. So we're going to present that to you as the bulk of this show, actually. We're going to start in the drug war data mining, since there is so much data in Paul's presentation, and we'll continue it throughout the show. But also coming up on the show today, we're going to go behind the headlines and ask the question, what happens to medical marijuana in 2016? Of course, Texas just passed a CBD-only law that's probably unworkable since it uses the word prescription, but it's just the latest in these states that have further winnowed down what medical marijuana started out as, which was people being able to grow their own flowers to treat themselves, and it's going slowly into the box canyon and becoming pharmaceuticalized. We'll take a look at that and the history of medical marijuana in today's Behind the Headlines. Also on the show today, we get our 420 radio news. We're going to talk about that big set of marijuana votes in Washington, D.C. We've got raids. Yeah, that's right. Raids still going on in California, despite the fact that Congress said no. We've got the U.S. Open coming to Washington State and everyone talking about what legal weed will mean for the golf tournament. Milwaukee, Wisconsin has made a great move in its decriminalization. And another terrestrial radio station in Colorado going all pot format. We'll tell you all about it when we come back from this break. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. Please visit our sponsors. Their support means you get this show absolutely free.
Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, fighting prohibition since 2012.
420 Radio is brought to you by Sacred Serum, who is focused on creating elegant and sophisticated cannabis solutions through its line of dispensers and vaporizers that come preloaded with the world's finest cannabis concentrate. Sacred Serum's concentrate is made on pharmaceutical-grade supercritical CO2 extraction machines that use absolutely no butane or other toxic chemicals. The Vesica, the company's innovative new way to dab and frost, is now available in dispensaries across California. Sacred Serum, elegance and sophistication concentrated.
Oh man, I really dig this tune. You should really check out this groove.
Cool.
Hey, check out more deep cuts like this on my show, Big Daddy Fink's Funky Roller Rink, every Thursday night on 420 Radio.
Funky Roller Rink.
Come join the fun at the CannaCon Expo, the nation's largest cannabis marketplace for products, services, and ideas. CannaCon is where the cannabis industry does business. CannaCon is coming to the Colorado Convention Center in downtown Denver, kicking off Thursday, June 11th through Saturday, June 13th. Tickets are on sale now at CannaCon.org. That's CannaCon, CannaCon.org. If you're looking for the best deals on growing gear and the most innovative products in the market, don't miss CannaCon. CannaCon will provide you with the opportunity to meet and do business directly and most affordably with the grow gurus and suppliers. CannaCon seminars are designed to be informal, open, and an educational conference where growers, processors, retailers, suppliers, and consultants can frankly discuss issues that impact this thriving industry. Don't miss CannaCon coming to the Colorado Convention Center June 11th through Saturday the 13th. Tickets are on sale now at CannaCon.org.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Russ Belville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds.
This is your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, June 2nd, 2015. Lawmakers are prepping for what could turn into a marijuana votorama on Wednesday, sources say. Pot advocates expect lawmakers to introduce at least half a dozen marijuana-related appropriations amendments that would roll back the Justice Department's authority to enforce drug laws around the country. The Justice Department would be prohibited from using federal funds to interfere with states' medical marijuana laws under an amendment expected from the California delegation of Representatives Dana Rohrabacher and Sam Farr. The measure was approved by Congress for the first time in 2014, but it must be renewed each year when the DOJ's spending bill expires. Some lawmakers hope to push the boundaries even further. An amendment from Representative Tom McClintock of California and Jared Polis of Colorado would prohibit the DOJ from using federal funds to interfere with any state marijuana law, including laws permitting the recreational use of pot. The Drug Enforcement Administration and the Federal Bureau of Investigations raided a state legal medical cannabis cooperative in the Lake Tahoe area Monday in a chilling reminder that the four-year-old joint federal-state attack on medical marijuana continues despite widespread opposition and a federal law barring the use of federal funds for such activity. Several reports trickled in Monday of the raid at Tahoe Wellness Center in South Lake Tahoe. Police took cash, cannabis, computers, keys, phones, and the like, reports indicate. A federal law passed in 2014 also bars the use of Department of Justice funds for such raids. However, the DOJ has stated they do not believe the law applies to California. The law's author, California's Dana Rohrabacher, said the Rohrabacher-Farr Amendment very much applies to the oldest medical cannabis economy in the world. Quote, "It's U.S. attorneys like Melinda Hogg in the Bay Area who are breaking federal law, not the dispensaries they're prosecuting," end quote, Rohrabacher explained. Golf's U.S. Open is coming to Chambers Bay, Washington in just 3 weeks, and it means a big boost to the local economy. Local pot shops see the opportunity as well. Quote, "We were really pushing to get open for the U.S. Open at Chambers Bay," said Alden Lynn, general manager of World of Weed, a retail pot store expected to open next week. Retail marijuana stores are one of the many industries expecting to cash in on the week of the U.S. Open Championship, a topic Tacoma City leaders even mentioned in an April study session. Quote, pot store owners are expecting a week's worth of marijuana sales each day of the tournament, end quote, said Tacoma City Councilmember Marty Campbell during the study session. While retail marijuana store owners are excited about the increased business the U.S. Open will bring, they're also trying to educate those out-of-towners. The Milwaukee, Wisconsin Common Council voted 10-3 Tuesday to reduce the maximum fine for possession of 25 grams of marijuana or less from $500 to $50. Alderman Nick Kovac, who authored the measure, said the current ordinance, which imposes a fine of $250 to $500 for first-time possession, unfairly affects the African-American community. Alderman Joe Davis, who said he was reluctantly voting in favor of the measure, wanted the ordinance to be returned to the committee to give the city's business community an opportunity to weigh in on the issue. Alderman Terry Witkowski voted against the measure, saying he believed it sent the wrong message. Quote, "We've been sending this message for decades," Kovac said. "It's not getting through," end quote. A state law enacted last year gives local governments more authority to craft laws on the possession of marijuana or its synthetics. In mid-April, a former Colorado Springs area Fox Sports radio outlet switched its format to K-High, a marijuana talk station. Now, a Denver station has followed suit. What had been KDCO-FM, Mile High Sports Radio, is now KBUD-FM, also known as Smokin' 94.1. In March, the station and its sister signal at 1550 AM were reportedly sold to Mark Paskin's Marco Broadcasting for $875,000. And this morning, Smokin' FM launched with syndicated host Bubba the Love Sponge. Bubba, who's made headlines for shenanigans aplenty over the years, is based in Florida, and his show isn't exclusively about pot. This morning, however, he kindly did an extended segment about THC lube. The Bubble the Love Sponge show has been an advocate for the legalization of marijuana long before it was the cool thing to do. This has been your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, June 2nd, 2015. I'm Russ Belville.
420 Radio, your ticket to the Boston Freedom Rally. Oregon has joined Washington and Colorado in legalizing marijuana. We're Portland Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws chapter in Portland, Oregon. Join us as we celebrate the launch of an exciting new era in marijuana freedom in Oregon. Our job has just begun. Powerful interests want to white out the most important portions of Oregon's legalization law. By joining Portland Normal, you add your voice to the thousands who voted for Measure 91 and want it to be implemented as written. The people have spoken. Now it is time for the legislature to obey the will of the people. Find out more about Portland Normal at portlandnormal.org. Attend our monthly membership meetings on the fourth Saturday of the month. See our website for more details. Portland Normal, ensuring responsible adult marijuana consumers are afforded the same rights, privileges, and responsibilities as beer drinkers. The Fingerboard Extension has fretted instruments to enhance your creativity. It has new and used guitars and banjos from beginning to high class. The Fingerboard Extension has National Resophonic, Husson Dalton, Larrabee, Heritage and Recording King guitars, and Mike Ramsey, Wildwood, Gold Tone, and Recording King banjos. The Fingerboard Extension also has drum stuff, used gear, and parts. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis, Oregon at 120 Northwest 2nd, or check out the inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com and reverb.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to Behind the Headlines, where we ask, what happens to medical marijuana in 2016? Yesterday, the governor of Texas signed another one of those limited cannabidiol oil bills. It's the 15th state to have such a law, and this one gets even more restrictive than its predecessors. CBD oil will only be available to epileptics only after they have tried at least two other conventional treatments unsuccessfully, and only if two doctors agree that CBD oil should be recommended. Now, these non-whole plant states represent proof of a theory that I've promulgated since 2010, known as the medical marijuana box canyon. The hypothesis is that if you fight for only medical marijuana, your marijuana is going to become medical only. Now, the Box Canyon, of course, is a metaphor from the old Western movies, you know, where the cowboys are riding to get away from the posse, but they get driven into an ambush where the canyon walls prevent escape on three sides, and then the posse can attack from the rear. Well, with respect to marijuana, it's the idea that our framing of marijuana as medicine, while it has been successful in helping us escape total prohibition, it's boxed us into a political trap that retards the decline of marijuana prohibition. And to understand this, let's take a look at the evolution of medical marijuana. We began in California in 1996, and they passed Prop 215, the most wide-open medical marijuana law in the nation. And, of course, the ease with which someone can get a medical marijuana recommendation there really makes their system more of a legalization with doctor's permission law, and notwithstanding the localities like Fresno that ban medical cultivation. But inherent in that idea of a doctor's recommendation is tacit support for the idea that marijuana use is bad, unless one has a valid excuse. It's the "we're patients, not criminals" frame. It transformed the frame of the prohibition of marijuana from a dangerous substance no one shall use to a medicine some stoners abuse to get high. And that shifted the evil from the plant itself to the person who's using it. So, in order to prevent the evil medicine-abusing stoners from gaming the medical marijuana system to avoid prosecution, the next set of laws added strict condition lists and patient registries. Plant and possession limits got lower and lower. Throughout the late 1990s and the 2000s, we got a dozen of what I call medical marijuana farming states, where patients can grow their own cannabis for medical use. Then, in 2010, Arizona passes the first medical marijuana law to limit who can grow their own cannabis. If one is within 25 miles of a dispensary, which, by the way, 97.2% of Arizonans now are, if you're within 25 miles of a dispensary, you cannot grow cannabis. You must purchase it at a dispensary. And Massachusetts followed with one of those "only people who can prove a hardship" kind of laws. They're the only ones who are allowed to grow. And successive states didn't even allow anyone to home grow at all. Everybody has to purchase from dispensaries. So now there are 9 of these medical marijuana dispensary states where marijuana is treated just like any other medicine that you have to buy at a pharmacy. And last year, we saw medical marijuana transformed into something you're not allowed to have in its raw plant form, as New York and Minnesota became the first medical cannabinoid states. Then, after Dr. Gupta's weed documentary showed epileptic kids being healed by cannabidiol, Utah kicked off the CBD-only craze that yesterday added the 15th medical cannabidiol state. And boosting the support for CBD-only in these states is that it doesn't get you high, which, of course, is something only those medicine-abusing stoners would want. So, for 2016 and beyond, what happens with medical marijuana? Well, I think we can expect more of the conservative Midwest and Southern states to pass some form of CBD-only law. Florida will likely pass either a medical cannabinoid or a medical marijuana dispensary amendment. But I believe the prospects of another state passing a medical marijuana farming law, letting patients grow their own cannabis, are slim to none. Marijuana has indeed become medical, and soon, as further clinical trials on cannabinoid medicines are passed, it will become pharmaceutical. And when that happens, you can expect to see Big Pharma's cannabinoid preparations replacing the crude flowers and extracts on the shelves in the medical cannabidiol, the medical cannabinoid, and the medical marijuana dispensary states. I mean, after all, we asked for them to treat cannabis like medicine, right? When was the last time you found any willow bark in the aspirin section? So, I don't agree that we have 23 medical marijuana states. By my definition, we have 1 legalization with permission state, California. We have 12 medical marijuana farming states, Alaska, Colorado, Hawaii, Maine, Michigan, Montana, Nevada, New Mexico, Oregon, Rhode Island, Vermont, and Washington. We have 9 medical marijuana dispensary states: Arizona, Connecticut, Washington, D.C., Delaware, Illinois, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and New Jersey. We have 2 medical cannabinoid states, New York and Minnesota. And we have 15 medical cannabidiol states: Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Iowa, Kentucky, Mississippi, Missouri, North Carolina, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Virginia, and Wisconsin. And just 12 states that have no cannabis law at all.
Oh, I could have smoked that pot.
Only if you're sick, Homer. Only if you're sick. Well, folks, it's 420 in the Mountain Time Zone. That means happy 420 to Reefer Rob and Lively Libra, who are out there in the chat room making things busy once again. Nice to see you there. Only 12 states left with absolutely no form of medical cannabis law. Of course, Idaho has to be one of those. We're back with Paul Armentano after this.
420 Radio, freeing your mind 24 hours a day. Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
Hey, I'm Herb Thrasher, host of the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour, live every Friday night at 8 Pacific. Tune in for 2 hours of metal marijuana mayhem featuring exclusive interviews with the latest bands, highlights of live shows, and the latest in marijuana news. It's the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour, Friday nights at 8 p.m. at 420 Radio, or catch the replay on Saturday nights.
Yeah, come to the weed shop, yeah, that's where we shop. Shop at weedshop.com. Come to the weed shop, yeah, that's where we shop. Shop at weedshop.com. Whether it's a vape pen, a pipe, or a bong, you can find it right now on weedshop.com. We got dab rings, nails, and ship it fast, whipping any of a competitor's glass. Come to the weed shop, yeah, that's where we shop. Shop at weedshop.com. Come to the weed shop, yeah, that's where we shop. Shop at weedshop.com.
Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Featuring Normal's Paul Armentano from Aspen, Colorado.
So we all meet again. I really like having the opportunity to come to Aspen to educate you folks on this issue, as it is a really growing and important issue, as I think we're going to see, or we are seeing, a parallel track as we see more states and more lawmakers on the one hand embrace the notion of ending cannabis criminalization and moving toward alternative regulatory schemes. At the same time, this brings with it an increased focus on what to do, how to regulate the issue of cannabis and driving. Now, as I'm sure everybody in this room already knows, we have traffic safety laws in the books in almost, well, in all 50 states, that I would argue sufficiently address this issue. Yet, that sort of comeback is largely insufficient to lawmakers. And there is clearly not an understanding among the public who, in some cases, we still need to win over, that there are adequate controls in place to address the issue of marijuana and driving in a jurisdiction where we see regulated cannabis markets. So whether you're a practicing attorney, whether you do DUI defense, or whether you are involved in advocacy and lobbying on the state or federal level, in any of those instances, this is information that's going to be really important to you to be aware of and to use in your day-to-day dealings. Now, I was asked to mention, in addition to the new edition of Marijuana is Safer, I have a chapter in another book that just came out, The Medicological Aspects of Marijuana, specific to Colorado. Lenny Freeling, who's in the front row, also has a chapter. It's possible there's some other folks that you guys are familiar with or even attending this conference that may have participated in this book as well. This is specific to a lot of the information I'm going to be talking about today. It's called The Medicological Aspects of Marijuana.
I have extra copies with me. We can talk
to Lenny about it. So what I'm going to talk to you for the next 15 minutes or so is science specific to cannabis and psychomotor performance. But then we're going to talk about some of the pharmacological issues, and we're going to talk about some of the regulations that are already in place and whether these are evidence-based regulations or policies. Now, just as this is sort of just CYA, Normal takes a position that we support the responsible use of cannabis. And within our principles of responsible use, we address this, going back now some two decades, the idea that we do not advocate people driving under the influence, whether it's under the influence of marijuana, whether it's under the influence of some other substance. We do not define that as responsible use. So think about that. When you have a case or you have a client and you call me and you say, Paul, I heard you can help me out with this case. Here's the story. My client was smoking in the parking lot and he turned on the car keys and he was just pulling out and he got pulled over. But his blood levels are really low. Probably not going to be the guy you want for that case. One of the first things I'm going to say is that behavior, as admitted by your client, seems to be in contradiction with Normal's principles of responsible use. And that's something I take very seriously as an advocate and also as a potential expert in this issue, having the ability to say that I say no to those sort of instances. So the first question, of course, is can acute cannabis intoxication be associated with changes in psychomotor performance? Now notice here, I didn't specifically say impairment of performance, because while I think the two terms are often conflated, they're not the same. We tend to see several instances where we see deviation from baseline performance after cannabis dosing. But those deviations in performance aren't necessarily changes that are associated with adverse risk of accident. For instance, one of the common deviations in performance we see is that individuals tend to drive more slowly and leave greater headway between their vehicle and the vehicle in front of them after following their baseline performance. That doesn't necessarily elevate accident risk, so I don't think it's fair to call that evidence of impairment. I think it's fair to call that a change in performance. So when we're talking about these changes in performance, not surprisingly, we see they're dose related. That means the greater the dose that is administered, the greater the change in performance we expect to see manifested. We also tend to see more significant changes in performance in more naive users. So the less experienced the individual is to the effects of cannabis, the greater the distinction we tend to see between baseline performance and performance after dosing. These changes in performance, and this is a really important one, they typically tend to be short-lived. Now, there's a number of different studies that look at this. There's a terrific meta-analysis by Berhaus and colleagues. Its only downside is that it's written in Belgian, and I can't read Belgian, so I can just cite from the abstract of the study. But what this investigative team did was they did a meta-analysis. They looked at all the previously published data associated with cannabis dosing and performance. And what they found was that subjects were most likely to deviate from baseline performance in the 20 to 40 minutes immediately after cannabis administration. When I say cannabis administration, virtually all these cases we're talking about inhalation. We're not talking about oral administration.
420 Radio, your ticket to Seattle Hemp Fest. Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane.
With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Welcome back. We're going to continue our extended drug war data mining with more from Paul Armentano on the science of cannabis and psychomotor impairment. He just finished making the point that if pot makes you drive slower and take less chances, can we really call that impairment? More from Paul Armentano on the science of pot and driving right now.
So what they found was among subjects on these batteries of different cognitive tests, we tended to see that about 70% of subjects would deviate from baseline performance in that first hour, beginning at about 20 minutes after dosing. But by the second hour, that 70% percentage of subjects that were deviating fell to about 30% of subjects deviating. So it begins to fall off a cliff after about 60 minutes. So they said, look, it's really this sort of 20-minute to 60-minute phase that they're defining as the acute phase of impairment or changes in performance. And this is a timeline that most experts agree with, including NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, where they talk about experimental research on the effects of cannabis. That means dosing subjects in a lab indicates that any effects dissipate quickly after 1 hour. That's in their 2003 final report. That's a report that is still online, and any of you can get it for free just by typing that headline into Google. And I would recommend getting that report. It's a little dated now, but the information there is very solid. In fact, I will plug NHTSA right here from the podium. I think NHTSA's materials on marijuana and driving are fantastic. Polito and colleagues published a study in epidemiology. This was looking at actual on-road crash risk. And what they found, again, was during the 60 minutes immediately after dosing, there was a significant elevated odd rate of crash risk. But that crash risk, again, fell significantly after that 60-minute time period. So they said the cannabis effect tends to disappear after the first 60 minutes. Now, what are some of these changes we might expect to see? Well, the most important takeaway is that these changes tend to be rather subtle. These are not changes that are really overt. Oftentimes, we have to be looking for them specifically. Robey and colleagues published a fantastic study in 1993. Again, many of you are probably familiar with this study. If you're not, you can get it online. This was paid for by your tax dollars. The Department of Transportation paid for this study. NHTSA published it. It's a rather forward-looking study. It's almost hard to believe that NHTSA did this at all. They recruited individuals who had some experience using cannabis. They put them through a series of road tests to get a baseline performance evaluation. Then they dosed them with cannabis, and they put them, they had them drive. First, they had them drive on a closed course. Then they had them drive in urban traffic. Then they had them drive at rush hour. So they gave these people marijuana and they had them drive in very difficult situations, driving situations with the general public. And they collected all that data. They said THC's adverse effects on driving performance appear to be relatively small. Now, Andrew Sewell from Yale and colleagues also did a meta-analysis. They looked through the literature. They again came to a very similar conclusion. They said most marijuana-intoxicated drivers show only modest impairments on actual tests. And then there's a fantastic study by Lemurs and colleagues in 2001. Again, this study was paid for by the federal government. There's a big fat report from the federal government. You can get it online for free. Just type in the headline. This was a study where individuals drove with a driving instructor in the passenger seat with them. The individuals used marijuana. The driving instructor had essentially like an emergency stop button if you thought the experiment was going poorly. And they put these people out with the general public in real world traffic, and they monitored how they drove. And they said it was concluded that the effects of low doses of THC and higher driving skills as measured in the present study, this was as measured by these driving performance instructors, are minimal. In fact, that NHTSA 2003 final report that I talked about in the last slide, they have an even better summary of this study where they said they found no differences between baseline performance and performance after dosing. We tend to see, and this shouldn't be surprising, but we tend to see that experienced users tend to become quite tolerant to many of the effects of cannabis, particularly as they pertain to psychomotor performance. I'm going to go through some of these slides rather quickly because I know some of you here have heard this material before, and you also have my slides on your CD. But when we talk about tolerance, we're not saying that these individuals are more used to being under the influence of marijuana, and therefore they compensate for their behavior better than someone who's naive. What we're talking about here is actual physiological tolerance. The THC and other cannabinoids are simply not having the same effect on performance that they would in a more naive user. And again, we have now several, probably about a dozen studies looking at differences on different batteries of performance and cognitive tests, including tests we use to measure driving performance that find very little changes in the habitual users and much more significant changes in the naive users. Sewell and colleagues acknowledge that experienced smokers who drive on a set course show almost no functional impairment under the influence of marijuana. Carl Hart makes up a very important point in his paper here, where he says, look, this is so well understood that when we are trying to gauge whether someone may be under the influence of marijuana, this should be among one of the first questions we ask. We have to assess the history of marijuana use in this individual, because that history is going to have a major impact on inferring whether this person is significantly under the influence or not. He says, these data emphasize the importance of taking into account drug use histories and examining multiple measures when investigating marijuana-related effects on cognitive functioning. The reason I stress that is because anyone in this room who's familiar with the drug recognition evaluation, the 12 steps, will notice that at no point in any of those 12 steps are there any conversations initiated from the DRE to the potential defendant regarding drug use history. That should be one of the first questions that is asked. It's typically not asked at all. We tend to see, and this isn't universal, but more often than not, we tend to see data showing that there can be an adjunctive adverse effect on psychomotor performance when alcohol and cannabis are used in combination with one another, even at low doses, even among people who otherwise are tolerant to the effects of cannabis. There's even been a recent study done where they took habitual users of cannabis to see if they had any cross-tolerance to cannabis and alcohol taken together, and they did not appear to. Now, all that said, I'm going to talk about a very recent NHTSA study that did not find at least when one looked at on-road motor vehicle accident ratios, a significant synergistic adverse effect between cannabis and alcohol, but most studies do find that effect. And one of the first conversations I have when a lawyer talks to me, I want to know if there's any alcohol involved in the case, and if there is, I tend also typically to shy away from it. So what are some of the manifestations that we would expect to see in somebody who is exhibiting these changes in performance in this sort of acute marijuana phase? And again, if we look through the literature, we see several deviations in performance that we see over and over again. It doesn't mean if someone's under the influence of marijuana, they're going to manifest all of these deviations in performance. It doesn't mean that somebody could not be under the influence of marijuana and show some of these as well. Again, these are sort of just general rules. We see these in some studies. We don't see these in all of the studies. We tend to see an increase in brake latency. This is the one we see the most. Variability of lateral positioning, which is really just a fancy way of saying weaving. We tend to see weaving fairly consistently in the actual driving studies. We see some decreased performance in critical tracking. We see some increase in reaction time. We see some changes in peripheral vision. Essentially, the idea that the defendant has tunnel vision. They're looking very closely at what's going on in front of them, but they're not paying very close attention to what's going on peripherally. Some changes in steadiness of speed. They tend not to maintain their speed to the same degree they did at baseline. Some changes in decision making. But again, the changes in decision making tend to be that they make fewer what we would consider to be reckless driving decision. They don't change lanes as much, for instance. They don't try to pass as many cars. But it is a change in decision making. How does cannabis and these changes differ from those associated with alcohol? I think this is really important. Because I think for the general public, when they are concerned or express concern about marijuana's potential impact on the roads, their only real point of reference is alcohol. They know that drunk driving is a problem. They know that people drive under the influence of alcohol and bad things happen. They know that people drive under the influence of alcohol and they speed and they make bad decisions. So they subconsciously in their mind, I think, make this assumption, well, alcohol is legal, yet it's associated with all these issues with driving. Marijuana has been illegal all this time. Well, its effect on driving must be like alcohol, but only worse, because after all, it's illegal. And I think we have to re-educate people to show that, yes, there can be some changes in performance, like I've talked about, associated with cannabis. But they're very different. In fact, sometimes they're the opposite of the changes that we see manifested with people under the influence of alcohol. So here's some of the real important differences. We tend to see less aggressive driving associated with people who have used cannabis. Allison Smiley and her team in Canada talk about this. They say, in contrast to the compensatory behavior exhibited by subjects under marijuana treatment, subjects who have received alcohol tend to drive in a more risky manner. Similar to that, we see that individuals tend to drive at a slower speed. Ronan and colleagues in Israel did a study using driving simulators, looking at both dosing after marijuana use, dosing after alcohol use separately, and seeing how it deviated from baseline performance. And they said that after THC administration, subjects drove significantly slower than in the control condition, while after alcohol ingestion, subjects drove significantly faster. And we see this a lot, that subjects tend to become overconfident after they've had alcohol. I mentioned this early. After dosing, subjects tend to leave more distance between their car and the car in front of them. Again, this is compensatory behavior. We tend to see an overestimation of time in subjects that are in the acute marijuana phase. We tend to see an underestimation of time with subjects who are under the influence of alcohol. And I talked about this. Subjects are aware of their impairment. They try to compensate for it accordingly. There's this subjective awareness. Oftentimes when you talk to these people in these simulator studies, you'll ask them, how do you think you drove? And they'll say, I thought I drove terribly. I didn't think I drove well at all. When an objective review of how they drove shows they really didn't drive that poorly at all. But in their minds, they don't think they're driving very well. So they try to compensate whenever they can, because objectively they're very concerned about their driving performance. Robay, again, this is in the NHTSA-sponsored study, said that subjects in the marijuana group were not only aware of their intoxicated condition, but were attempting to compensate for it. That's why they lower their speed, that's why they leave more distance between their vehicle, the vehicle in front of them, that's why they don't make as many lane changes. These findings support the common belief that drivers become overconfident after drinking alcohol and that they become more cautious and self-critical after consuming THC or smoked marijuana. We also see an interesting study done with oral THC. This was a study done in Europe. And again, I put this in the contrast to alcohol file because I don't think you typically see this with alcohol. So these individuals were supposed to drive on a closed course. They were going to drive around cones after taking several doses of dronabinol. And most of the subjects, after dosing, they simply refused to do it. They said, no, I don't feel comfortable. Don't give me those car keys. I don't want to drive on this closed course. I don't think I can do it sufficiently. Again, very different than the stereotype of the individual leaving the bar, and you have to like hide his keys behind the jukebox because he keeps telling you that he's okay to drive.
420 Radio, your ticket to the High Times Cannabis Cups. This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at the Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get the Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. If it's about weed, it's on the Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay. Read the Weed Blog today.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
The Russ Belville Show reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while. Share.
You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs, we've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter.
All right, we got one more segment here of Paul Armentano from Normal's Aspen Legal Seminar on Cannabis and Psychomotor Performance to make sure that all of our friends on the podcast subscription get this amazing information. And you can also find the entire file up on my SoundCloud page at Radical Russ.
All right, here's a little bit of science for you, but I'm going to try and make it as easy as possible. It occurred to me a few lectures back when I was talking about this, I started talking about odds ratios. And finally when I was done, somebody raised their hand and they said, Paul, what the hell is an odds ratio? So I figure I'll walk you through what an odds ratio is. Because any time you see a study that is attempting to link a certain risk, an association between a certain behavior and an outcome, that they are associating with that behavior, you need to be looking at two things, either relative risk or odds ratio. If neither one of those phrases are used in the study, that study or the authors of that study did not try to determine whether there was an actual link between a certain performance and a certain outcome. I run into this all the time. There was a really, really widely popularized study that came out last year that said marijuana-induced accidents have increased threefold. Study didn't say that. The authors didn't say that. There were no odds ratios in that study. We have no idea what association there was between marijuana use and car accident in that study. And the authors will tell you that. The media just did not get the memo. So an odds ratio estimates the probability that an event will occur, like say a motor vehicle crash, versus the probability that such an event will not occur. So if a variable, like say positive for THC, is not associated with said event, the odds ratio of crash involvement associated with that variable is 1. So an OR of 1 means there was no association between this variable we are looking for and a particular outcome we are expecting to see. If your OR is above 1, that indicates that there is a positive association between this behavior and this outcome. If it's under 1, that means there's a negative association. That means people that engaged in this behavior were less likely than your control group to have this particular outcome. So when you're looking at odds ratios, you're always thinking, what is this number in relation to 1? So when we look at the literature, I often hear this. I say, we just need more literature on marijuana and driving. We just don't have a whole lot of literature looking at this. That's code. That's government speak. For we have a whole bunch of literature, and that literature doesn't support our public statements and our public policy. Therefore, we need to keep having more literature until we finally get a study that tells us what we want. Because right now we have a whole bunch of studies looking at positive drivers who test positive for marijuana and accident risk. And what we find is the odds ratios consistently are very close to one. So this is a meta-analysis that was published by Rune Elvik in the journal Accident Analysis and Prevention a couple of years ago. They looked at 66 studies associating drug use and motor vehicle accidents. They didn't just look at cannabis, but I highlight cannabis because it had some of the lowest odds ratios. Cannabis and drivers who tested positive for THC and fatal injury have an odds ratio of 1.26. Drivers who tested positive for cannabis and had an accident that didn't result in fatal injury, they had an odds ratio of 1.10. Neither of these reached statistical significance. What that means is there was such a range of ORs, including ORs below one, that the authors couldn't give any statistical power to these numbers. So what that means is, yes, the numbers were up over one, but they couldn't say definitively that there was anything statistically significant associated with these numbers. Now, the only other drugs that were identified in the study that had odds ratios this low were analgesics, your antihistamines, penicillin, and in fact, your antiasthmatic drugs had an OR that was higher than what we saw associated with cannabis. Now, we saw a whole series of other drugs that had odds ratios that were much higher. Amphetamines had odds ratios over six. This means that a driver who tested positive for amphetamines had a six-fold increase in risk of accident compared to someone who tested negative. Six-fold means they were 600 times more likely to have an accident compared to somebody who tested negative for drugs. Cocaine had about a 2.5 odds ratio. Opiates was around 3. Your sleep aids, like Ambien, had an odds ratio of about 2.5, which I find actually surprisingly low, having taken Ambien a couple times. I couldn't find the car keys, much less even begin to try and navigate driving. But again, point being is we see a number of drugs with much higher odds ratios, and nobody is talking about setting per se limits for these substances. And here's just a blow up from that particular study. Again, if people want the study, just contact me. I have most of these studies available as PDFs. Now here's the study from NHTSA that came out in February 2015 that I really want to highlight. Again, you guys paid for this study. You should be aware of it. NHTSA, about 8 or 9 years ago, decided to do what would they consider to be the gold standard study to determine whether there were any links between drug use and elevated risk of accident. They were going to use a prospective Grand Rapids model method. The Grand Rapids model is the method that was used a long time ago in Grand Rapids, Michigan to determine blood alcohol concentrations for eventual per se laws. It is considered to be the ideal way one determines whether there's an association between drug use and accident. And NHTSA had never performed a study using that model for drugs other than alcohol until now. It took them about 5 years to do this study, which was largely done at Virginia Beach. It involves 9,000 subjects, 3,000 cases, and 6,000 controls. So they had two controls for every case. This is the largest such study that's ever been done like this in the United States. What they found was that drivers who tested positive for THC had an odds ratio of motor vehicle accident of 1.25. So very low, very close to one, but 25% increase compared to drivers who tested negative. To their credit, what the researchers at NHTSA did was when they were looking at this data, they noticed there was a whole lot of overlap between THC positive drivers and male drivers and younger drivers. And they said maybe there's more than one variable that's responsible for this elevated OR. So they said, I wonder what would happen if we control or we adjust the odds ratio for drivers' gender and their age. And when they did that, the odds ratio dropped to 1.05. It became insignificant. So essentially what they found was many drivers that have accidents and use marijuana, they're almost all exclusively younger drivers and they're men. And if you take that out of the equation, the marijuana alone becomes insignificant.
What's the risk for alcohol?
Again, the study looked at that. So They did a very, again, I would recommend tracking down this study. They looked at other drugs as well, not just marijuana. The alcohol numbers were very much in contrast. What they did is they had BACs from 0.01 going all the way up to 2.0. Interestingly, drivers with BAC of 0.01 and 0.02 had ORs under 1. They were safer drivers and controls. BAC of 0.03, you started to see slightly elevated odds risk. By the time you get to 4, you see about a 0.04, you see a doubling of odds risk, and then it goes for about 4 to 6 by the time you get up to 0.08. So, obviously, again, it is a dose response relationship, but the odds ratios tend to be get very high very quickly.
With the odds ratio, what does doubling look like? Is that 2.0?
Yes. A doubling is 2. Odds ratio of 2. Yeah.
And what is THC positive? How is that defined?
It means that they tested for THC in their blood.
So any amount whatsoever.
There's a whole number of other case control studies that are fairly recent in the literature that also find THC positive drivers coming up with ORs very close to 1, or in some cases at 1. Romano and colleagues, this was a study done looking at FARS data, crash data in the United States. They found that drug positive drivers for all drugs other than marijuana had elevated odds ratios, but they found the marijuana positive drivers did not have elevated odds ratio, which they said in the most convoluted way possible. They said when the drug positive variable was separated into marijuana and other drugs, only the latter was found to contribute significantly to crash risk. The other way of saying that is that marijuana positive drivers did not contribute to crash risk. This is a study of Polson and colleagues. This is an interesting study from New Zealand. This study really makes silly the 5-nanogram proposed. And there's a lot of data that makes that silly that I'll talk about shortly. How am I on time, Lauren?
You have 15 minutes.
Okay. In this particular study, they acknowledge a weak association. So overall, they found an odds ratio of 1.3, which wasn't very high with their THC-associated drivers. But they also acknowledge that drivers that tested positive at 5 nanograms or higher, they had an odds ratio of 1. So they had no statistically significant risk. That risk was made up of the drivers in the pool that had much lower levels of THC in their blood. And then I'm going to move quickly because, again, you have these materials. You can see there's a number of other studies there as well. Your outlier is the study done by Lee and colleagues at Columbia University that shows an OR of 1.83. So we're getting close to this doubling of risk that people seem to tremble on when they hear. But the reality is lots of behaviors can increase your risk of accident. Driving with more than 2 people in the car increases your risk more than 2-fold. Far more than the risk associated with marijuana. Simply being pregnant and driving a vehicle increases your odds ratio of having an accident by 42%. Again, higher than the risk we typically see associated with marijuana. If you're a tobacco smoker and you drive, not just really drive and smoke tobacco, if you simply have a history of tobacco using, you have a 50% risk of having an accident compared to people who don't use marijuana, who don't smoke. And if you text and drive, your risk of accident, according to NHTSA, goes up 23-fold. You have 2,300% more likelihood of having an accident than someone who is not texting at that time. Even alcohol's ORs don't come remotely close to this arena. And again, we are not putting people in jail for texting and driving. Maybe we should be, but as a public policy, we're certainly not. I'm going to go through this material really quickly because I want to get to some new material. Some of this is stuff you know. This is an important chart if you've never seen it before. It talks about the pharmacokinetics of THC and its cannabinoids. Pharmacokinetics refer to what happens after cannabis is consumed. How does your body absorb it? And you see with THC, you see this initial spike.
We'll get to the rest of Paul Armentano's presentation, the last 12 minutes or so at the top of Hour 2 in Toker Talk Radio. That's all the time we got for today in Hour 1. Thanks for joining us here on the Russ Belville Show, your source for the best in drug war data mining to help you win the water cooler wars and the legislative arguments. I mean, this is Sabbath Slayer level stuff. This is good stuff from Paul Armentano. For everyone here at 420 Radio, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. Stay tuned for Hour 2, and until next time, Take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
Take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.